growing up, I didn't really have, like, I wasn't very conscious. I was just kind of like surviving whatever space I was in. And it's a new environment, even for my mom, trying to like navigate, you know, what it means to be here in Ireland. Because when you're back at home in Nigeria, you're not facing any sort of like racism or discrimination against your skin color. It's more so classism.
Hello again and welcome to the Insights podcast. My guest today is a Nigerian-born, awfully raised singer-songwriter whose soulful voice and heartfelt lyrics have made her one of Ireland's most compelling emerging musical talents. From her early days singing in church to her viral rendition of the Saw Doctor's N17 alongside the RTE Concert Orchestra, Tolu McKay continues to captivate audiences. Beyond the studio, she's become a passionate advocate for mental health, using her platform and personal journey to open conversations about self-worth and emotional well-being. She's a former Google employee who left the corporate world to pursue her career in music, something she describes as 100% her life. Tolu McKay, you're welcome to the Insights podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tolu, you travelled up here this morning by rail from Tullamore. So you've got this Irish background mixed with Nigerian background. How did all of that shape you?
Well, the transition, I suppose, when I came to Ireland, I was about like 5 years old. And like when you're five, I don't think you're as aware of like your surroundings or what's going on. I do remember being quite young, and when we first moved to Offaly, to Tullamore, there was like another kid maybe about around our age. I don't think that kid had ever seen another black person before. So I remember like that child being like, "Mom, why is their color like that?" You know, and that's what, like, less than 20 years, you know, ago. So that like kind of transition of like being aware that you're slightly different but not understanding why was always a kind of like underlying humming thing I didn't necessarily understand. But in context of like how I suppose it has shaped me, I don't know. I think like I studied psychology, so I feel like a lot of things that do shape you comes down to your environment and also just the genetics of your makeup as well.
And before you left Nigeria to come to Ireland, how was the move explained to you, Tolu?
I don't know if it was explained. I can't remember. Honestly, I can't remember at all. I just know that I was coming. I don't think it was explained. I don't think it was like, oh, this is going to be your new home, or this is, you know, it was just a life transition, I think. And then maybe at the age of maybe 13, maybe that's when I was like kind of more conscious about like what I wanted and was trying to be a bit more vocal about like how I wanted to perhaps approach my life. And I suppose maybe that was just a way of surviving or coping, like maybe an odd coping mechanism as a child, because nothing was sort of explained. You're just living.
And you really got involved, I gather, in the local community. You took up camogie and got really stuck into it.
I did, yes. I actually loved camogie. And my mum is a huge, like, she's into sports. At the moment, she's actually, she was taking up the chair as a representative for sports for Nigeria. So she gets to like kind of travel to certain countries to like represent sports, because that's what she grew up on. She was representing Nigeria at some point when she was really young in softball. So she was always into sports. And I think she definitely wanted one of us to take her lead. But music was the transition that I took. I loved camogie. I was brilliant at it. So I thought I was great at it. Because you have to be fast. You know, you need to know how to like dodge the ball, catch the ball, get the ball into the net as well. Yeah. No, I really enjoyed it. I wish I actually kind of continued. As a fashion girly, I'm like, I like skirts. But for the practicality of it, like if you can wear shorts, then let wear the shorts. Yeah. But I'd love if the option is there. Like if you want to also have that as an option, then sure. But if you want to wear shorts, then that should be fine too.
So that's the camogie side of things where you were involved locally. But also there was music. Tell me about that.
So music was just always like it was just always in the house. It was always around. I remember when my granny came to kind of like stay with us and mind us for a bit. She had like bags of cassettes and her little like radio thing that she'll play the cassettes in. And like every Saturday, every Sunday, just any day really, you just hear the music permeating in the house. Growing up, I grew up in a very religious household. So music and religion goes hand in hand. Every Sunday, I'm doing like choir meetings. Every like Tuesday or Fridays, there's always something to do with the choir and Saturday. So music was always like around within the context of like the religion that I grew up in. And then I think it was perhaps around 13, 14 that then I started doing like competitions outside of it being or having to do anything with like my religion or what I grew up in.
So you grew up in a Pentecostal church environment. What was that like? Was it fairly intense?
No, it was just normal. Like it was the norm. It was just normal life. It just is what it is. It's like everyone is in some form of like religion. So it's just like a normal way of living and existing.
Are you still singing in church or are you still a spiritual person? Or how did all that pan out in your life so far?
So am I still in church? No. The last time that I was active in church or singing in church was, I don't know, it's been a couple of years, and I wouldn't necessarily call myself religious either. Perhaps spiritual for sure, but I wouldn't call myself religious, no.
What about your psychology studies then? You moved to Galway to mm-hmm. study.
Yes, I did my undergrad in Galway and then I came up to Dublin to do my HDIP, and then Trinity is very expensive, so I had to drop out and then I got into the corporate world. Mm. But yeah, I think at some point I would actually love to go back and finish my clinical, hopefully doctorate degree in psychology. I don't know what I'd specialize in. Before, I wanted to become a neuropsychologist, but I don't know. I don't know. We'll see how life pans out, if I want to go back into it or not.
Tell me a bit more about your time in Galway. You were there for what, 3 or 4 years?
I was there for 3 years, yeah. Galway was lovely. Galway was very nice. I think it was a different, bigger space than being in Offaly, of course, meeting different types of people. I never knew there was a place such as Isle of Man until I met someone in Galway that was from there. It was just a random thought that popped into my head there. but yeah, no, Galway brought a lot of adventures and different meeting new and different types of people. Yeah, it was nice. It was a nice city.
Mm-hmm. And did you have an Erasmus year out of there? Or was all
no,
your time?
No, I wish I did. I actually wish I did. The possibility of going to Turkey for a few months was there, but I didn't take it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And did you get jobs for yourself along the way just to supplement whatever grant or family support you had?
No. So I just survived on Susie. I don't know how I survived on Susie, but I did. I wasn't working for those 3 years. I was just in uni and I was just surviving with the 600. So like once I paid half of it with rent, then the 300 is what I had to survive on for the month.
Right. But at one stage you entered a competition, I think, which required
yes.
you as part of your prize or at least being the winner
yeah.
to do a lot of traveling.
I did a gospel competition that I won. But before that gospel competition, this was before uni, I did a competition called Midlands Got Talent. And that's, I can't remember how much it was, but I remember at least half of it I was able to kind of put into accommodation for when I went into Galway. And that was useful. And I think getting that money reminded me, well, it made me realize that music could be something that could actually become a viable career path for me if I was to pursue it as a business option or something that I could like see myself doing long term. Because I think prior to then it was like, oh, I'm just doing competitions and I'm meeting up with friends and I'm, you know, making amazing music and this is nice and I'm going to church. But now getting that money was like, okay, I'm actually able to maybe support myself financially, maybe support my mom a little bit. Maybe this could be something I could be doing on the side while I'm working as a psychologist. Because for some reason, I thought I could be like a rock star at night and then have my 9 to 5 during the day. But I don't think I'd get any sleep if I was living that kind of lifestyle. But yeah.
So even though initially you didn't see yourself having a professional career in music, maybe that caused you to rethink a bit and see it as an option?
Yes, for sure. That experience for sure made me realize that, you know, this could be, because it was such a small competition, like it was in the Midlands. It was like Midlands Got Talent. Before then, I had been doing competitions, but maybe you'd like win a medal or you'd be on like the local newspaper, but it wasn't anything like substantial. Like,
right, I mean, you're talking about things like Fesh Kill, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So it was nice to, you know, get the money, get some money, have my mom actually have like physical handed money and then be able to actually use it into some of the rent for when I do go into uni. So, yeah.
Now, you've said that you've struggled with your identity in the past. In other words, the blend of Nigerian heritage with Irish culture, that took some adjusting to do, did it?
I think even till now, it's something I'm still adjusting to. Because growing up, I just as a child in general, I was pretty shy. I was just very much to myself. Like I mentioned, growing up, I didn't really have like, I wasn't very conscious. I was just kind of like surviving whatever space I was in. And it's a new environment, even for my mom, trying to like navigate, you know, what it means to be here in Ireland. Because when you're back at home in Nigeria, you're not facing any sort of like racism or discrimination against your skin color. It's more so classism and hierarchy of like wealth that you kind of have to combat, which also exists here on top of, you know, the added layer of that.
Did you encounter much racism?
When I was younger, I didn't know what the word was. All I knew was bullying. I didn't have the language for it. And I wasn't educated on it like at all. It was when I went to a boarding school that had other students from various places all over the world that then there was a girl that was like, yeah, so this is what that word means. And that this is why it's bad. But it's not up until like maybe like my 20s into like my late 20s now that I'm like reading and uncovering and like actually speaking to people and then looking back and reflecting on like my own experiences of what I went through and being like, oh, okay, that's under that's
you see it through the rear view mirror, as it were.
Yeah, because like I said, it's one of those things where you're just like, you're living, you're surviving, you're existing. Something doesn't feel quite right. You don't understand what it is. And I suppose this is probably, again, why I went into psychology, because I was just trying to understand humans or just understand myself and being very confused as to why life felt quite difficult, but I didn't understand why.
How did you fare out when it came to making friends?
Till today, I'm still confused. making friends, I don't know. I've always found it quite difficult because even me coming from a religious background, no longer seeing myself as religious removes a certain type of community that you are used to. And then being a certain percentage within like Ireland, like I think there's maybe around 3% of Black people in Ireland. So being in that kind of like commune, but then not being religious also kind of divides you and puts you into a different like box or category in order for you to make friends. But then growing up as well, like the proximity that you're in, those are the friends that you have. And I suppose the first time I kind of had that was in Tullamore in Offaly. That's why I always call like Offaly home, like I'll call Tullamore home. But then growing up, obviously everyone grows up, change, we move, everyone's traveling, we're busy.
Was there a particular reason or set of reasons why you kind of detached yourself from the church?
I was studying psychology and philosophy when I was in uni.
And did you just stop believing?
It wasn't that I just stopped believing. I think once I got out of uni, I was still very much within the church. I think there just wasn't any, I don't know how to explain it. It's quite complicated. It's different layers and nuances. It's the fact that like as humans, we are definitely going to be making various mistakes. No one is holier than thou or holier than anyone or more better than anybody else. I think there were just questions that I was asking that I couldn't necessarily get from the church, or even when I did speak to pastors or deacons or whatever, the answers that I kept getting was you just need to have faith. Or you need to believe. There was no like concrete, solid thing that I could necessarily hold on to. And that's just wasn't sufficient enough for me in the way that I thought. And with then reading books like from other philosophers where they're questioning like the existence of life in everyday life. Just like if I look at something and someone else looks at something and they have a completely different view and perspective of that one thing that we're both looking at, which is true, who am I to tell them that it's wrong? So is that like, it felt like it's the chicken before the egg or the egg before the chicken kind of argument. So I was just like, you know what, let me just put myself aside in this and let's see how life pans out, because I've been taught to believe this for so long, and I'm now curious to see what life would look like without this faith base, was my thinking, I think.
When you finished your academic studies, you found yourself working in the corporate world, ultimately ending up with Google. And was that a definite choice on your part as opposed to, say, going into educational psychology or clinical psychology?
No, when I started getting into the corporate world, it was mostly for finance. I remember when I got my HDIP, I wasn't even expecting to even get in. I remember I put Trinity as... Once I finished uni and NUIG, I put Trinity down. I didn't think I was going to get it because I didn't even know what I was going to be doing with my life after. I hadn't thought that far. Anyways, got into Trinity, and then they told us that this course is 2 years, and it's one of those courses that's very in-depth, so you can't work and also do this course. It's just not possible because of how much you need to learn. But I don't have the finance. I had to pay for the tuition of getting into Trinity myself. Susie wasn't going to help me, so I had to get a job. So IDG was the first corporate job that I did, which was like cloud sales and selling things online to like different kind of companies and people that may need it. But it wasn't sustainable, so I had to leave one. And unfortunately, psychology had to be the thing that I left, because I was still doing music while I came to Dublin, and I was finding like community within that. But music hadn't like picked up yet. Like it still was some form of a hobby that I was really passionate about, but it wasn't what was making money. Music was the thing that I needed for myself. Music was the way for me to express and relate with other people. So I needed that. I needed to make sure that I kept music. In psychology, I was like, we can come back to that at any point. It'll be fine.
And do you think you still might?
Definitely. Yeah. I think maybe when I'm like in my 40s, I think I'd like to come back to it.
A lot of life to be lived between this and then, yeah. Though, now, so you gave up your job in Google, presumably well paid, and you had a lot of material supports then as a result of that. But really, you decided you're going to go for the music.
Yeah, yeah.
Was there a kind of a crisis that led to that?
Yes. Well, with explaining, like, for example, uni in Trinity, full-time course, then doing full-time job while I'm doing a course that's so... that takes a lot out of you, and they tell you not to work while you're doing this course, doing that. And then also pursuing music and trying to build a community in that music. I was doing all that up until Google came knocking on the door, left my course with Trinity. But I still wasn't, I don't think I made a transition of like understanding how to balance everything. So before I made a decision to quit working in Google, I had kind of gone through, I'd say like a burnout stage, but I didn't understand what it was. All I could remember was that I couldn't get out of bed. I wasn't eating or taking care of myself at all. Like a week would pass me by and then immediately everything would seem back to normal and I'd be happy and radiant and everything would be okay. But when I saw that happened twice in the space of 2 months, I was like, okay, I think this is something actually quite serious and I need to look into. So I saved up a little bit and then quit my job at Google. And I was like, you know what, let's just try and do this music thing for a year. Let's just take a break, because I had never taken like a break or like a year gap. It was just never a thing. I didn't have the resources to do that. So I was like, you know what, let's just try this music thing for a year and then we'll figure out where we go from there.
So was it in the course of that year that you came to work with the RT Concert Orchestra and doing your rendition of the Saw Doctor's N17?
So yeah, the end of 2020, I remember, I think it was like maybe October or November that I was asked to do that.
How did that happen, that total recreation of a very popular song?
Well, I will definitely give a lot of credit to Gavin Murphy, who is the conductor of the RT Concert Orchestra. Like, he's the one that made the arrangements. And we hadn't met. It was all through like WhatsApp that we were communicating and me sending him like my voice notes and everything. To me, in my head, it felt like it was just another gig. But I didn't know that the impact was going to be so huge, and I didn't know that it was going to, you know, relate to people as much as it did. I don't think I really understood the context of or the history of the song as much. I think, like, the type of person and singer that I am, I love to make sure that I can put my spin and my emotion into the song. I think that's very important. And when you're reading like lyrics or reading something, if you're not believing in what you're saying, it's going to come out. And I suppose in some way people could relate to how I felt while I was singing the song.
And what came next? What flowed from that?
A lot flowed from that, gosh. A lot of festivals that I've been wanting to perform at, getting to perform at the John F. Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., getting to work with Ireland Tourism, getting to work with different types of like companies in Ireland, performing, getting an agent. But also, I think what came from it is that it made me want to even dream bigger. It made me want to know that, you know, a girl that came from a really small county, a really small town, is able to like strive for greatness and become one of those stars that you see on TV. And it just didn't feel like that reality was not possible. Like, it felt like the impossible is absolutely possible.
So how has the reality in the intervening years compared to the dreams that opened up and the possibilities at that time? You mentioned just a few of those engagements that you got, which are, it's a very impressive list, from the Kennedy Center to Fall to Ireland and so forth. But how are things going now?
It's going well. It's going really well. I think I'm at the point where I'm still definitely wanting more. I think at the moment with my art, my creativity, I'm the type of artist that wants to create their own world. I want to create my own visual world. I want to let people into my story and my life in my own creative way. And I suppose when I think of artists that I'm inspired by, for example, like the modern artists that I'm inspired by, and I'll give you context, it would be likes of like FKA Twigs, Florence and the Machine, that have a really interesting way of interacting with their audience through their visuals and their music and their soundscapes. And I'm trying to use that and create that with my music. And I think my focus now is more so on creating experiences where my audiences feel like they know me, and also not just me, but they feel like they can really be themselves in whatever space I create. So recently I did a gig at Workman's, and not just Workman's, like all the few gigs that I've been doing along the years, I've been kind of building it moment by moment to hopefully become like a really successful tour at some point in the future, once I have money. But like what I've noticed and what people have told me is that they feel like it's created like a really healing like space for them. People have cried, and when I'm performing, people cry, they laugh.
You made Graham Norton cry with the SFT.
Yes. Yeah. But like, even like with my own songs, I'm happy that it's still creating that impact, and that is what people are seeing.
You've got a new song called War.
War is a song that it started off as a poem. I was in London that summer, I don't know how many producers I was working with that summer. It was a lot. And I had a session in with one of them, and it was the day that we heard that Sinead O'Connor had passed. So I went to London Irish Centre. They did a gathering where we got to like all be together and speak and be in commune. And a lot of people went up and spoke about how Sinead O'Connor made such an incredible impact in their life. And I think I was just really inspired by that and quite touched, because it then made me reflect on like how there's been so many incredible people even before us in our time that have continuously found ways to advocate and speak up, or even just through the way that they lived, they've really lived a life where you feel so inspired and almost encouraged to just try and live your truth as best as you possibly can. and seeing how other people felt so impacted by this one person, and so many people across the world were grieving this same person. It was just, I don't know, just...
They identified not just with her message or messages, but also perhaps with her vulnerability as
yes,
well.
Yes, that vulnerability, exactly. Like that vulnerability to also let people see like the messy like life that you also have. Like it's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that you've been emphasizing as well. You're part of a powerful initiative in relation to mental health, and you've openly discussed your own mental health and the need to check on it daily. How do you check on your mental health every day?
So, for example, going to that gig, writing that song and creating that into like a poem and then releasing it. I think, like I've said, music has been a way for me to express myself. And the older I'm getting, the more I'm realizing also speaking out and using your voice and just actually talking to people and interacting with people is also a way of taking care of your like your mental, making sure that you're connected with other people around you. But I suppose the way that I try and make sure I'm conscious about it is anytime I'm feeling any kind of like loneliness or grief, I want to put it into something. So if not music, then I have someone that I can speak to and be like, hey, this is what I'm thinking, this is how I'm feeling, just so that you're not left alone with your own thoughts.
Is that a friend or is it a therapist or some sort of
counselor? It can be a friend, it can be a counsel. Over the years, it's been so many various things. I've had like therapists. I have my boyfriend who I speak to now, who doesn't mind me be like, hey, I have this existential thought about this thing. Because I think just the type of person I am, I like to have like really long, deep conversations for me to feel connected to understanding why the world is the way it chooses to be. So it's nice to have those like long-winded conversations about like everything that's impacting the world. And
you
me.
Probably did a fair bit of that when you were in Galway during your student days, did you?
Oh, definitely. I think philosophy absolutely helped be like, wow, I can just think and just keep thinking in this space for that, for us to just think about the world. That's incredible.
Do you have any regrets about leaving the commercial world or the corporate world behind?
No, I have no regrets with leaving the corporate world behind. I think what I've learned is that I quite like the stability of it. But in terms of like what the music and even the financial aspect of what music has provided me, it's greater than what I could have expected from staying in a corporate world. Mm-hmm. It's just the inconsistency of being in a creative
so
world.
So what does success mean to you now? What does it look like, as the phrase goes, say, compared to when you started out?
Success now means that I'm being able to create the worlds and the music and the things that I want to be able to achieve, and I'm able to put it into reality. Mm-hmm. I think that's what success to me means right now. I think previously, I think I just wanted to be known. I wanted people to see that I could like do the thing. But now the older that I'm getting, it's like, no, I want to be able to create something that is substantial, that I know that I'm really happy about, that I'm capable of doing. Mm-hmm. And it also allows people to feel confident and competent enough to think that they can also achieve those things too.
You've got an EP coming out, I think,
yes,
in the
I
autumn
do.
And War is going to be on it. Have you got a tour or what's
I'm
in the
hoping,
mix?
I'm hoping. So if everything all goes according to plan, with how much I love to plan, I'd love to do a headline. I do have the Cork Jazz Festival lined up, so I will be performing. Dates and all of that will be shown on and shared throughout my socials. My socials are Tolu_Mackay on Instagram and just Tolu Mackay wherever you can find me. And yeah, my plan is to also kind of do a few surprise pop-up shows around Ireland as well. That's what I'm planning to do. Those are things that just make me
Why
happy.
Why would you want to do a surprise pop-up? Would you not be better off having a promotion and, you know, let the word out well in advance to as many people as possible?
I would. I definitely think I'd be doing those, but I also want to do intimate shows as well. I want to be there with people that have been with me over the years and have something that's intimate and specific for them. I definitely will be doing like the big grand shows for sure. There's just many things that I need. You know, I'm a completely
because
independent artist.
There's a great
artist.
Network of theatres now, big and small. I'm thinking of the place in Letterkenny, in Portlaoise, not too far from where you live in County Offaly. The places like the Town Hall in Galway, they're big enough, but they're not huge. Are those the kind of venues venues that you would see yourself?
Oh, yes. I do love venues that are, you know, grandiose, that have a history with them. I've learned that I'm not a pub girl at all. That's not the kind of vibe that I like to perform in. Spaces that allow for one to be very theatrical and for you to create your own like visual world and allow people to come in and sit and experience what you're putting for them. So I think those would be great venues, 100%.
And what about beyond these shores, the UK, Europe?
Oh,
the
yeah.
States?
Oh, please. I would love to. Yeah, I'm absolutely thinking about that. I relocated to London a short period last year. And that was just, I just felt like a new lease of life, like for my music and like inspirations. So I definitely see myself maybe going off for a while and being in a space or just going to different countries and like taking inspirations and then coming back and putting that out as art.
Could you see yourself, say, going to Nigeria to perform there?
Oh, 100%. I'd love that to be a reality.
But it's one thing to say, I would love it. But I mean, is it something that you're working on to try and make happen?
Not at the moment. If the opportunity does come, I would definitely take it. But it's not something I'm working on just yet. I think my plan is to have this EP out, try and just keep going and getting more people to know who I am outside of Ireland as well, and just try and push out me as an artist. I suppose the challenging thing is just I'm the manager, I'm the one doing everything myself. So it's quite difficult to kind of see everything.
You haven't got your Louis Walsh yet.
No, I do not.
You're a big star, but you're going to become a bigger star overnight at some stage.
Absolutely. They say it takes 10 to 15 years to be an overnight success. So,
well, look, I wish you the very best. It's been very nice listening to you and hearing about your life story and the issues that you're contending with and so forth. We wish you the great success. I have to say, that is just a stunning transformation of the Saw Doctors. You met them, by the way, didn't you?
I did, yes. No, they're lovely. I'm so happy that they actually loved the rendition as well, because it could have gone the other way, but no, they loved it. Got to perform with them early, I think, 2021. It's just been upwards and hopefully continues to be upwards from there.
Tola McKay, thank you so much for joining me on the Insights Podcast.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
That was episode 16 in this series. To hear more in this series, go to rte.ie/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. There you'll find a whole range of episodes with our wonderful guests who share their insights, including manager of the Saw Doctors and founder of the Galway Arts Festival, Ollie Jennings. Pioneer of Irish media and former RTE producer Leela Doolan discussing her resignation from the organisation and her passion for activism. Neuroscientist Dr. Brian Penny discussing his 15-year addiction to heroin, plus many, many more. And remember, if you hit the follow button on your preferred platform, you'll be alerted when a new episode becomes available.